Welcome to Pod to the Rescue, a podcast from Summit Dog Rescue in Boulder, Colorado.
I'm Emily.
And I'm Libby.
We're both professional dog trainers with multiple certifications in dog training and behavior. Together, we have more than two decades of experience in dog rescue.
We want to share everything we've learned along the way with other folks involved in dog rescue, sheltering, fostering, and adoption, and anyone who just loves dogs.
Rescuing the dog is just the first step.
We're here to help with everything that comes next. Hello, listeners, and welcome back. Today, we are bringing you an interview with Ferdy Yao of Behavior Vets, all about a specific kind of arousal-based behavior. We've covered arousal on the podcast before, but we had to have Ferdy on to talk about arousal biting, which is a whole other level of arousal-related behavior.
Yeah, I started watching Ferdy's Shelter Short video series on the Behavior Vets Facebook page. And this series came out first when we had Otter in our program last year. And Otter was a foster dog who definitely was struggling with arousal biting in his foster home. And immediately when I saw these videos, I thought, oh my gosh, this is such critical information for anyone in sheltering, fostering, or rescuing, because it does show up in rescue dogs. And I feel like it's not one of the topics that we are super familiar with. And we've had this same issue multiple times in our rescue. And when we've had it, it's been a really big deal. And you just kind of need to know immediately how to address it.
Yeah, it's a big behavior. It can be overwhelming to deal with it and to know what to do with the dog in the moment. So we'll definitely link to these Shelter Shorts videos in our show notes. Check them out if you want to see the process more in depth. But this conversation with Ferdy about his training plan and a deeper dive into what exactly is happening in a dog who is exhibiting these behaviors is super fascinating and really critical information for shelters and rescuers to know.
Yeah, I would encourage everyone to go watch the videos. They are, in my mind, kind of a roadmap for working through this behavior. Even if you just have little whispers of the behavior, even if it's not like big arousal biting, I would say if you have the little signs, which could even be leash biting, it's important to know what this is and how to deal with it.
Yeah, because it can escalate. So rescues and shelters, as you are evaluating your dogs, when you see this behavior, keep this conversation in the back of your mind. Ferdy Yao is a behavior consultant and director of shelter and community outreach with Behavior Vets and host of Worry Less, Wag More, the Behavior Vets podcast. He is the staff trainer at the Humane Society of Westchester and instructor at Ketch Canine Trainers Academy. We'll link to his full bio in our show notes so you can read all about his amazing background working with animals.
And if you don't already follow Behavior Vets on your Facebook or Instagram feed, I would highly recommend following them.
They're a fabulous resource. All right, enjoy the conversation. All right, hello, Ferdy Yao. Welcome to Pod to the Rescue.
Hi, thank you. I'm excited to be here.
Yeah, thanks so much for taking the time. So before we jump into this really rich conversation about arousal biting, can you briefly just tell us about who you are and what you do for Behavior Vets and your role there?
Okay. I have two titles at Behavior Vets, the director of shelter and community outreach, and I'm also a behavior consultant with Behavior Vets. I am working with dogs, canine behavior consultant, and my background is I'm a wildlife biologist turned dog trainer. I'm one of the lucky people who actually got to start. I got to start my training career at the Central Park Zoo, so I was able to work with exotic animals before I started training dogs, and so that I just found like a very interesting way to kind of get into dog training, made me think about dog training in, you know, just different from the traditional dog training industry, I think. My role at Behavior Vets is just trying to help shelters and rescues with any kind of behavior issues. It's still, you know, it's an ongoing process. It's a lot. I want to build up more programming for shelters and rescues. So we're in the middle of doing that and trying to do more to offer more. And at the same time, I'm basically just training dogs. I'm helping clients privately with being behavior vets. Most people come to us with more challenging behavior issues that are usually related to fear, anxiety, or aggression.
Mm-hmm. I think you're just the perfect person to have on our podcast because that's one of our missions, to help rescues and shelters with their own behavior programs. So we're really glad that you're here. So one of the reasons we reached out to you is because we saw your amazing Shelter Shorts series of working with Chewy. And Chewy was this dog with a lot of arousal biting and arousal issues. And we see this tons in rescue. Mm-hmm. And we even had a doodle mix last year who was a big arousal biter. And we had to do a lot of work with him. And we think this is a pretty common and misunderstood behavior.
Yeah, so, absolutely.
Yeah. So can you describe arousal biting to our listeners and maybe explain a little bit how this behavior presented in Chewy?
Okay, sure. So first, I want to define arousal. I'm taking this from from Dr. Kathy Murphy, who I watched one of her webinars recently. I really love her definition of arousal. I don't think it's like hers. It's a biological definition, but I like how she presented it. So I wrote it down just so we have it here. So basically, arousal, the way the biological definition is, it's a state of physiological activation or cortical responsiveness, which is associated with sensory stimulation and activation of fibers from the reticular activating system rooted in the brainstem. Okay, so simply, you know, basically arousal is an increased state of readiness. Okay, I think that's a simple way of defining it. And it really, you know, depending on what your perspective is, you might define it in a different manner, but that's what it is. Arousal is readiness. And you know, we need arousal. Like, mm-hmm. You wouldn't be able to get out of bed without any kind of arousal, right? You know, I think about, like, when I was younger, I used to be able to jump up out of bed and, like, basically just hit the floor running, get going. Now that I'm a little older, it takes me a little longer to get out of bed and get the body moving. Okay. Mm-hmm. So arousal is something that is something that, you know, we need. We can't always say it's good or bad. Okay. I can understand from a caretaker's perspective, when you have a dog and when we're talking about arousal biting, that could be considered a bad behavior, right? So arousal biting, I'm not sure I have a definition of that, but I would call that's biting related to an increased state of readiness, of a dog that is excited and they are really not really thinking very clearly about what their actions are. And as we know, with many dogs, kind of using their mouth is kind of a default behavior when there's nothing else to do. So they use the mouth to basically grab onto whatever's close to them. And that could be a leash, that could be a body part, a human body part, that could be clothing, it could be a toy, you know, it could be a lot of different things. It's different than aggressive biting, but I don't want the listeners out there think, like, okay, there's a clear separation between arousal biting and aggressive biting. Because I think aggressive biting is, there's an intent usually behind it. you know, like, and we're talking about a dog that is seeking to create space between you or between the target of the bite and the dog himself or herself. And that could be like, it's a basically a distance increasing behavior, you know, back off, or, you know, unfortunately, in some cases, it could be a way to eliminate a perceived threat that the dog is feeling. I think what's important to also understand is arousal can make aggression more likely because it can change how an animal, you know, processes the information around their environment about threats. You know, something that may not be a threat, but when a dog is in a high state of arousal, they could interpret some sort of stimulation, some sort of stimuli as a threat, and that could turn into arousal biting, can suddenly turn into aggressive biting. You know, for example, I can get sometimes like you have somebody who may be a little bit inexperienced handling dogs, and then you're usually with arousal biting, we usually see it in your younger dogs. Okay, like your adolescent dogs or definitely puppies, you know, puppies mm-hmm. are just putting their mouths on everything. But if you have a handler who's maybe not experienced with that type of behavior or not, they don't understand how to handle that behavior, they may respond kind of forcefully themselves to move the dog off of them. A dog can in turn perceive the handler's actions as a threat, and then that can turn into a whole spiral into aggression, which obviously can be a huge issue.
Yeah, so there's like an escalation on both sides, it sounds like. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly.
So what do you know about, if anything, about Chewy's background? And listeners, we're going to link all of these videos in the show notes because it's really fascinating to actually see visually this work. But we were just wondering if you had a little information on Chewy himself.
Yeah, well, we don't. Really, he came up from Texas he arrived at our shelter October 31st. In 2021, so you know, last year, he is still there. Okay, you know, really at this point, I think people are really missing out on an amazing dog. That he's, I can tell a little bit more about him. That my experience with training Chewy. And I'm not just saying this just because, like, I'm trying to sell him, you know, I mean, obviously he deserves a home, but he is really one of the most fun dogs to train and one of the smartest dogs I've ever trained at the shelter. The way he picks things up is absolutely incredible. You know, it's at this point now, he's almost like you could almost just probably, you know, put him into a home and he'd, you know, he's still a little rough around the edges. Okay. He's been living in the shelter for, close to 10 months now.
Wow.
So he's going to need like house training. Okay. but other than that, you know, he is just really doing so much better now. He's, you know, as long as he gets the right enrichment in his life, he could make somebody really, really happy, you know? The way he presented his behavior, it took a little time, before I realized the seriousness of it. You know, in the beginning, you take him out, and he might grab onto the leash, which many, many shelter dogs do. One of the first things we do, one of my first things to do is when a dog's grabbing at the leash is, we may walk them with a chain leash, because for most dogs, it's a little bit more, it's unpleasant for them to grab onto a metal chain rather than like a nylon leash, a cotton leash, or a leather leash. So using a lot of times just using a chain leash can be helpful for that. While I have the dog on a chain leash, then I start to work on some training to teach him some other strategies to teach him, you know, basically not to grab that leash. So that was the first thing. Like, he would grab the leash when you would take him out of the kennel. Okay, because obviously that's when the dog is very, very excited. You approach the kennel. They know in most cases when someone's approaching the kennel, something good's going to happen to them. Perhaps they might go out. So they're very excited. They come out of the kennel. They're ready to roll. They're highly aroused in that state. And then once you're outside with them, most of that behavior didn't occur anymore, except like if he saw a dog. Now, Chewy is actually very social with dogs. He really enjoys playing with dogs, especially female dogs. He's a little picky about some males. One thing we noticed is that when he would see another dog and he was on a leash, he would very frequently go grab the leash and grab and bite at the leash. And then you, as a handler, you're like, you're holding him, he's tugging on the leash. And the more you tug back on the leash, the more he's tugging, because then it becomes like this fun game for him. I think that was an arousal and frustration can be related, because the frustration can very quickly turn into arousal. And I think the problem here with Chewy was that he really wanted to get closer to the dog to interact with the other dog. And because he's on a leash, he's prevented from doing that. And then he gets himself into such a state that it's like, no, we can't let you create a dog when you're acting like this, because that may not be the best way to greet dogs, because the other dog may not take kindly to his his increased arousal state. That was when we first saw it. Okay. But then there was one day, I think I think it was in January. It's part of the YouTube series videos that I showed. I was playing with him. It was after a little snowstorm. We were playing ball. He would fetch balls very, very well. Looking back at it, I think he got frustrated when a ball fell in the snow and he couldn't get to the balls, or he had trouble getting to it. So then you could see in the video, he would turn around and then he would come at me and grab me. Now, I've been working in shelters since 2016. So, you know, I've seen quite a number of dogs, and most dogs, when they start to do that, most of the time, my first strategy is just to stand still like a tree. Do nothing. Okay. And most of these dogs do stop, you know, they kind of like, this is boring. You know, you're not responding to me when I'm grabbing you, you know? Most of them kind of stop. And, you know, that's like the first thing I try to do is just try to like do nothing, but he kept going at it. Then I'm trying to distract him with treats by like dropping some treats into the ground, and he was not even going for the treats. He liked toys, so I tried to take a toy. He's like, okay, go chase this ball again. He took a couple of steps. I tossed the ball. I took a couple of steps towards the ball. Then he whipped around, turned around, and jumped right back at me. And that's where I was like, oh, that's when I actually had to go grab him by his collar, because unfortunately, I didn't leave a leash on him, which in retrospect, I probably should have. That could have been a better way of defending myself. Okay. But I had to grab his collar and basically kind of hold him away from me and go, you know, go find it, put him back on the leash. And that's when it finally stopped. And that's when I was like, wow, okay, this is not your typical, or what you would frequently see in a shelter, where a dog would do some arousal biting, but they would stop very quickly. He wouldn't stop. So that's, you know, obviously that was a huge problem with him. I think with Chewy, like, and I think with a lot of shelter dogs, part of the reason why they wind up at the shelters, it could be behavior issues. A lot of times we don't know what kind of training history dogs have, what kind of skills they've learned to do well in a human world. Okay. And I think that's important to remember that these are dogs, okay, not furry humans, right? Mm-hmm. And the human world is it's hard enough for humans to live in the human world. And so it's hard for dogs too. So I think what Chewie really lacked was, when I look back at it now, is that he didn't have the skills to communicate to humans what he wanted to do, you know? One of the things I found with Chewie was the arousal biting would occur more frequently in these type of contexts where, well, we talked about when he saw another dog and he couldn't get to the dog, where if you're standing somewhere or you're not moving much, and I think he would get frustrated, like, why are we doing nothing? Why are we just standing here? And then I just described to you the time when I was playing ball with him in one of our pens and he was off the leash, that he wasn't getting to the ball and he wasn't having as much fun playing fetch as he usually does. And then he turned that into a arousal biting. I think a lot of these shelter dogs that come in, they lack these skills of, like, just imagine, you know, you don't know what's going on with your whole world. You're being transported from maybe one shelter to another. You have trouble communicating with the caretakers that are around you. You don't know how to communicate with them. And that could be very frustrating. It could be very scary. I could definitely, just imagine how that turns into that arousal biting where they just don't know what to do with themselves and they, default to that type of behavior.
That's making me think about the two significant arousal biters that we've had in our rescue over the decade that we've been doing this. And it really came out when they were adopted and then they were very quickly returned. And I think it could be like they had all of a sudden their world was in upheaval. They were in a new place and they were both young males with no training or skills. And that combination of like stress, excitement, and frustration must have like bubbled to the surface. And, you know, it's significantly scary for the adopters. So I love the way you describe it. Like, we were definitely compassionate, especially with the second one, since we now had a better understanding of arousal biting. Yeah, but they were both super successful, but kind of like Chewie, it took a lot of work.
Yeah. I think that makes a lot of sense. Like, I hear that a lot. I think one mistake that a lot of people make when they adopt a dog is... first it's like, you rescue a dog from a shelter and you feel like you're doing a good thing and you want to show them, the best life ever. Right. And I think one mistake that people make, is that they do too much too soon, where the dogs, like we all understand, like, our brain has a bandwidth to deal with certain things. And when you're going through changes, think about, like, when you've had to move in your life and think about how much bandwidth that takes, just moving your household from one place to another. And I am sure, because I've been through it a few times, and that it's a very stressful time for a lot of people. And it's hard to deal with anything else when you're dealing with such a major thing that's going to change in your life. And so when we think about our dogs, they are learning, they're brought into a new home, okay, a completely different environment, new people to meet, possibly new pets to meet. They don't know what the rules are yet. They don't know where they're supposed to sleep, when they're going to sleep, where they're going to eat, or whatever. All these changes can take up a lot of bandwidth in the dog. So sometimes when you do too much, you start taking a dog, let's go to the kids' soccer game, let's go to the dog park. We have to go to the vet. And all this is occurring in one day, and it can get the dog, very upset or stressed. And you can see some of these behaviors come out. And here's another thing too. I think here's another point that I think isn't spoken about enough. And we're learning a little bit more now that I'm learning this from Dr. Kathy Murphy, who was hired onto our team recently. So pain can be a part of this. Okay, so pain can increase arousal. And that can sound strange and counterintuitive because it's like, well, when you're in pain, you probably don't want to move that much. But I think Dr. Murphy makes a great point of this is that, if you watch professional athletes, like many of them are dealing with pain, okay? But yet they're able to go out and perform at a high performance level. And part of that is that when your body is aroused and activated, okay, and the exercise and movement, it helps release adrenaline and cortisol, and those are actually painkillers in the body. So, you may feel it, like you're a little sore, your back is a little sore, but once you get moving, it loosens up, you get a little warm, okay, but then once you stop moving and you settle down, your body stiffens up again, you get sore again, and it hurts again. So being aroused for a dog can be a way to prevent the painful feeling that they're having. So I think that's also another point to kind of look at is, especially with shelter dogs, like sometimes they may be coming in with, they're not healthy. Okay. They may have come from, a compromised environment and their health is, not great. So, sometimes I see dogs that come in and they come from really poor conditions. They're physically in poor conditions, but yet they show a high state of arousal. And in the past, I was a little confused by it, but then I just figured, well, maybe this dog has a whole lot of energy. But now I'm starting to think a little bit more about, wait a minute, are you uncomfortable? Are you in pain? Is there something going on that we need to look a little deeper in? Okay. These are hard things to really detect in animals because it's easier to see when an animal is like really in pain and they're lame and limping. But if they're in mild pain, that can be hard to tell, especially for a vet because they're already kind of stressed at the vet and they may be trying to hide things at the vet. So I think that's another point of another aspect of arousal that we need to also consider, especially if you are working in a rescue or shelter and who knows where these dogs are coming from.
Yeah, that's so fascinating. And it makes total sense because if we're talking about arousal as a physiological response, then it makes total sense that it's connected to other systems in the body and other things that are going on, including pain. Wow, that's a super key point.
Yeah, yes. I never thought of that before. One thing I was thinking about with your training plan was there was a lot of focus on teaching him impulse control and using games mm-hmm. and play. It wasn't mm-hmm. what you would typically think of as like obedience. There wasn't, big commands. It was a lot of really fun play. Could you discuss your training plan and what your thoughts were behind it?
Sure. I'd love to. When I train dogs at the shelter, I actually, while I do train some of those basic, what you would consider obedience skills, like sit, down, stay, leave it, I actually don't really focus on that a whole lot when I'm working with a dog at the shelter. My reasoning is that those skills are generally very easy to teach most dogs. Most dogs get these tricks, like, within a couple of training sessions, most of them really get it, okay? So I consider that easy stuff. And while I'll teach dogs those skills just to make handling them a little bit easier in certain situations, a lot of times I'm like, I'm not really that worried about it. Like, I'm not concerned that the dog is doing a perfect sit, stay or something like that. And I feel like that's something that, the adopter, we can show the adopter and we can help the adopter work on that. Cause I know a lot of people, that's what they're looking at. They come in, they look at a dog like, hey, and one of the first things a lot of people do is like, they ask the dog to sit And when they're really impressed when a dog does that, they're like, yay. Oh, what a smart dog. Yay. I'm like, yeah, the 8-week-old puppy can do that. But so when I work on training plans at the shelter, like first, like I am only there one day a week. Okay. And the entire, basically the behavior department is me. So we have some volunteers who are very interested in training, and we have a few staff members who are interested in training, but that's not the main focus of their job. So I'm trying to basically triage. I know I can't work with every single dog at the shelter. So I'm picking the ones that need the most help. And I'm working on their behavior. And the reason why I focus a lot on impulse control is because we have a lot of dogs that are within that age range of about 6 months to about 2 years old, kind of like that adolescent stage. Okay. And that is something that a lot of them really lack. Okay. That the impulse control, the ability to slow down and think a little bit first before they act. So the arousal biting is very frequently like, so for example, one of our kennel staff members had entered Chewy's kennel to fix his bed or something like that. And he just jumped up, grabbed her on the arm multiple times. So she got some bruising there. Okay. So he's not really thinking. He's just seeing like, oh, this person's entering my space. And while he's a friendly dog to people, he was probably confused. Like, are you taking me out? Why are you coming in here? And then he's like, you know, grabbing her. So a lot of the dogs at the shelter, like they lack that impulse control. They just want to charge out the kennel. They want to charge out the door. You get them on a leash and they just pull you and just try to, you know, get to wherever they need to go as quickly as possible. You try to hand them a treat, and before you can even bring your hand down to the mouth, they're jumping at you, grabbing the treat out of your hand, or it's a toy. So that obviously makes it hard for these dogs to adopt out. You know, they jump on you, they're grabbing you. So I want them to learn how to just slow down, slow their roll, and teach them some alternative default behaviors that helps them learn how to get attention, you know, seek when they're seeking attention from a human or they're seeking something. You know, teaching sit would be simple. Okay. So like, if you want me to throw the ball, if you want the ball, you want the bone, you want the treat, sit first, and then I'll give it to you. So I work on the impulse control part to slow their brain down a little bit so they start to think a little bit. And I like to use play whenever possible because one, it's a great way to bond with the dog, right? And you know, it's sad to say, but you know, you've worked in shelters long enough and you know, like a lot of times the shelter staff or you yourself, you might be the first person who's really shown, you know, true kindness to the dog, right? And try and figure out like, what do you like to do? What would you like to do today? You know, I don't want to go through these drills of sit down, stay over and over. Let's play a little bit first. Okay. So it's first like part energy release, right? Kind of channel their energy in an appropriate manner. But then, you know, I incorporate little bits of impulse control while we play. So now we're starting to, you know, we're bonding with the dog. We're learning how to interact with each other. Like I'll take Chewy's example. He really liked to play fetch with different types of toys. So you could throw a toy, he'd go grab it, he'd bring it back to you. But then Chewy would either, he wouldn't let go of the toy. So if you try to grab it out of his mouth, then you get into this game of tug, which is also highly reinforcing for him. Okay. He liked treats, but play was a lot more fun for him. So you could like trade treats for some toys, but at some point he's just like, yeah, I I'm not letting go of this toy. And then, you know, it became a part of, like, we just had to teach him that I'll throw the ball again. I'll play with you again if you release the toy out of your mouth. So for him, he had to, you know, go grab the toy, bring it back to us, and then learn, like, okay, nothing's going to happen until you let go of that toy out of your mouth. And then the other step to this was, now you had to try to grab that toy before, because when you, if your hand reached towards the toy, he'd grab it too. So then we had to start to slow him down to, like, basically allow us to grab the toy, pick it up, and throw it again. So you get to play this fun game of fetch again. So adding all, teaching him impulse control taught him how to slow down and learn how to play this game of fetch, which he found very rewarding. But it also became a way of, like, teaching him, hey, don't grab my hands, okay, when I'm grabbing for the toy, okay? We integrated a down behavior. So we not only did we, like, wait for him to drop the toy, later on, a few steps later, is we waited for him to lie down first, and then we pick up the toy and throw it for him. So we added all these little pieces that made him start to, like, okay, I want to play with the toy. So instead of, like, you know, throw the ball, get it, bring back, throw the ball, get it, bring back, it became throw the ball, get it, bring it back, release the toy, lie down, wait until the human picked up the toy, then repeat the whole cycle again, throw it. So that helped really make him think a little bit more, make him slow his brain down a little bit more. So he's not just going from A to B immediately. He's learning how to just, again, just think about it, slow down, look at what's going on in the environment, you know, pay attention to the cues that are coming from the human in order to continue this fun game. Okay. So that's why I like to use play. It's great for bonding. And it's also great for integrating, especially if you have a dog that's highly motivated to play, to integrate small acts of impulse control. I like to be fair. So this is why I tell all my clients, like, you know, you can build impulse control. Like, some dogs are better at it than others. But you gotta be fair, right? You gotta meet the dog where they're at. And you start with something that they can achieve, and let them feel, have some success at that before you push it to the next step where you add another step or you add a little bit more duration. And then, you know, you just keep doing that, integrating that into the things that you do with the dog, like play or just regular everyday life. Like, for example, taking a dog out for a walk. Okay. Like at the shelter, I don't ask dogs to sit at the kennel door and then I open it up. Most of them are just, it's just too hard and too stressful, especially if there are other dogs there. Everybody's barking. It's very, very uncomfortable and stressful for all of us. But what I might do is I get the dog out of the kennel as quickly as possible. Then when we get to the door to go outside, that's where I might ask him to, hey, as long as they know it, you know, if they don't know, like, something like sit yet, I might ask him, just give me some eye contact. Just look at me. Okay. Acknowledge me that I am here on the other side of the end of the leash. Yeah. And then I'll open the door for you. And I like that because it starts to teach the dogs that check the humans out, check out those primates who are holding your leash. They'll help you get access to good stuff in your life. And I'm hoping that will generalize or, you know, transfer to new people, new adopters, who work with them, who adopt them. Like I said, I think teaching them all the other skills, you know, basic manners training, I think that's easy to teach later after they're adopted. Yeah.
I love that. Listening to you and also watching the videos, it reminded me so much of how I approach dogs when I have a foster. So it really resonates with me of, like, I want them to learn as opposed to, you know, have a few little like tricks that they can do. And sometimes it's not that obvious what you're doing, but you really are teaching them like good things come to those who wait is one way I think of it.
Exactly.
You know, and you might have to slice that so super thin at first because no one's ever taught them. And then the other thing I was thinking of is some trainer I listened to said, putting it in like an if then statement, like if you sit, then I'll put on the leash, like just really fast. But like, you know, if you can just take one breath at the gate, I will open the gate, you know, just that kind of dynamic. So that they start to learn that a little bit of time to just think and slow their brain down and figure out how they can maneuver their environment. And then I was also just thinking, I raised a human for the last 21 years. And, you know, he did not come pre-programmed with impulse control. And the adolescent years were really tough, but in a lot of ways he had learned impulse control from just the little teeny things that he learned at one and two and three. Like, you know, if you were just a little, give me a second of calmness in the car seat and I can unsnap it, you know, so that translates to when he's 15. But if you've got a shelter dog who had no one ever taught them how to think or to slow down or to control outcomes. So I love how you're so kind and approach it as teaching.
Yeah, it really is. And when, you know, going back to Chewy's behavior plan, it's the more we taught him, it's almost like the more pathways we taught him to, this is how you get a human's attention. This is how you get the ball. This is how we start play. The more he used those new pathways instead of what he did in the beginning, which is just, I'm just going to grab and hold on to the first thing I see, you know, whether that's a body part, whether that's the leash, he's come such a long way, and it's amazing. It's like, and it really is. It's at first, like if you showed somebody, you know, the video where he was just jumping up and grabbing people, like people would say, "Oh, that's a bad dog," and no, he's just confused. He didn't know what to do and how to get what he wanted. And now that we gave him all these other skills, he's consistently using them. And I haven't had him do any type of mouthing in months. It's been such a long time. And he's had plenty of opportunities. I've tested him just to see how far I can push it. And he's been so, so good. His default behavior now is, I'll just lie down.
That's amazing. He'll
lie down when he's tired. To lie down when he wants to play with the ball. he's just learning, like, okay, you know, this seems to be a very reinforcing behavior, whether it's in the case of like, it's hot outside, can we just take a chill? Okay, we'll chill. Or here's a toy, lie down, okay, I'm ready. we've been doing some cooperative care work with him, and just doing that, like he's fantastic at just lying on the mat and being still on the mat while I'm brushing him or I'm trimming his nails. He's been pretty cool about all this.
That's amazing. And, you know, watching the videos, you can tell a big difference from the first video to the later videos. So I really encourage our listeners to go watch them. So we talked a lot about playing, and for Chewy, it sounds like building training into those interactions was really useful because he found it so reinforcing. But for some dogs, can play be too arousing? And are there other things that need to be addressed before you can start this type of training?
Oh, that's a great question. Yes. Play absolutely can be too arousing, right? You can have dogs that are addicted to that pattern of going, chasing after the ball, bring it back, and keep doing that over and over again. And then you can have dogs that just kind of, they get so excited and aroused. Like we think of the the Yerkes-Dodson law, which is basically that it looks like an inverted U, an upside down U. So stress has an effect on performance, right? So when we're talking about performance and arousal, like if you're low arousal, like you're sleepy, okay, you're not going to perform very well, all right? But if you're too excited, okay, so I'll give you an example. Like I love baseball, and baseball is one of those sports where if you are too aroused or too excited, you really want to hit that ball as hard as you can. The harder you swing, the more likely you're going to miss the ball. But you also can't be like so relaxed and chill that you're not really swinging the bat very hard. So you got to find that optimal level. So that's where the peak level is at, that, you know, the upside down U at that top part of that peak. Some dogs, when you're playing with them, they can go over to that side of that part of the arousal where they're too aroused, and their performance suffers because they just can't control their bodies. They can't control themselves, because what's really happening in the body is like you could probably see, if you look carefully, you have dilated pupils, their respiratory rate increases, their heart rate increases, their muscles are ready to perform, right? So that can affect their performance. One of the things I did with Chewy, it's one of the earlier videos, is I would play with him, but I would actually, and he had a leash on at the time too, just in case he became too aroused and started biting or started doing something else. I could use the leash to quickly manage him and control him, and also defend myself if he went after me again. But I would actually get down on the floor, and he'd be in front of me, maybe 3-4 feet away. And we would play a very a mild game of like, I'll throw the ball to you, or I'll throw the toy to you. And we just kept exchanging. So just teaching him how to play in a much lower level, teaching him other skills, like just lie down on the mat and relax, and I'll feed you some treats while we're lying here on a mat. Okay. Teaching him those skills. So trying to play at a calm level can help the dog kind of learn a little better, because they're not so frenetic or frantic that they're not really learning very well. They're just like chasing after things that move really fast, whether that's a ball or a human or whatever. So we get them to like slow down and focus on, how do you play with, a human just sitting a few feet from you, and you're tossed a little toy to you, you can catch it. Let's do an exchange, exchange either with another toy or a treat. And let's just repeat that again, and just try to keep it low level. I like to keep those play sessions short and brief, okay, and have fun with it. All right. And then we might kind of move on to another exercise. Other things that might teach a dog during the training plan is pattern games. So a lot of Leszek McDevitt's pattern games, which I love.
We love those.
Yeah, yeah. They're simple to teach. You don't need to have the best coordination or timing to do a lot of this. So one of my favorite ones is like the 1-2-3 game. Okay, so having that predictable, repeatable pattern, where the 1-2-3 game, for those of you who don't know what it is, it's basically what it looks like is I count out loud 1-2-3, and then I put a treat down. 1-2-3, put a treat down, and I repeat that over and over, and that pattern has a way of helping a dog that can be stressed, whether it's excitement or whether they're fearful or anxious, to just kind of bring them out of it and bring them back to kind of, maybe the good word for this is like kind of ground them a little bit, bring them back to you so that their focus, goes from like a high arousal state, and now we start to bring it down a little bit. Or if we're looking at the Yerkes-Dodson curve, we're at the end of the curve where they're too aroused, and we want to bring them back to that peak part of that curve where their performance is optimal. So it's more of like, hey, let's just bring you back to earth a little bit, dude. Let's calm down. Okay. Uh-huh. And so I teach these skills along with play so that we are able to use it when we need to, when a dog gets a little bit too excited to arouse, that we are able to use some other skills to like, hey, let's lie down on the mat and relax. Okay. Let's do the 1-2-3 game. That's very helpful when you're outside. Once a dog knows a 1-2-3 game, I'll even incorporate while we play. So I'll actually count aloud 1-2-3, and then I throw the toy, and then I repeat that again. So just to kind of reinforce that pattern game.
That's awesome. And it's great to have these skills already in place, so you can take a little break when you need, and you can, you know, like you said, just help the dog move through various states of arousal. So after one of your fairly active training sessions with Chewy, you say that you're going to take him for a sniffing walk. And also one of these videos is all about doing nose work. So can you explain why the sniffing walk and the nose work are important parts of a training plan for a high arousal dog?
Oh, cool. I love you asked that question because I love getting dogs to sniff. So sniffing, and I think a lot of trainers out there have kind of known this for many years anecdotally. Like if you just let your dog sniff around a bit, it has a calming effect. But like a lot of us didn't really know why until now we have the technology to actually see why. So like we could put a pulse rate meter on a dog while they're sniffing. So some researchers did exactly that, and they overlaid it with videos of the dog sniffing. And what you actually saw was the more they sniffed, the more intensely they sniffed, their heart rate went down, decreased. So the act of sniffing can help a dog actually slow down that heart rate. And also sniffing activates part of the brain that releases dopamine. So the act of sniffing itself can help a dog feel better. That, you know, because it helps release dopamine to the body. So when you have a stressed dog that's fearful, anxious, or they're just too excited, getting them to sniff a bit can help them to slow down a bit. So I like to think of sniffing as kind of a meditation for dogs or mindfulness training for dogs, of getting them to focus on one thing. You know, think of it. I think a lot of people out there, especially these days when mental health is such an important issue for many of us, and it's a wonderful thing that I think one way that a lot of people try to calm themselves down is do breathing exercises, right? So you focus in on your breathing, and that makes you kind of slow yourself down, slow your breathing down because you're focusing on one thing. And I compare that to the same thing to dogs. It's getting them to do some nose work, or taking them on a long walk where you just let them sniff the environment as long as it's safe. It has a nice calming effect on them. I like to do that because when I go out with a dog, I like to, especially with these young dogs like Chewy, we got to do some sort of activity. You know, they need a little exercise, but I also don't want it to be just strict exercise because then you just build stamina and then you end up needing to do more exercise. I'm not looking to just tire them out. So we do some activity, we play, and of course, you know, learning's always a part of everything that you're doing with the dog. But then when we're done, I don't want to just put the dog back into a kennel when they're all like, all charged up, right? So if I have the time, I'll try to do something like that. Let's go on a sniffing walk and let them sniff around a little bit, just kind of to decompress a little bit. And usually, almost always, what I do is I'll give them some sort of enrichment, some sort of puzzle toy, usually a food puzzle toy, and I put it in the kennel with them. So they're not just like put into the kennel after they've been like playing fetch for half an hour and they're all charged up. I want them to have a way of like, you know, being able to focus on something and decompress. And you know, I think that's actually really important is that some dogs or many of these dogs really lack that skill of learning how to calm themselves down. So doing more of this, doing more of that sniffing, doing nose work, giving them enrichment activities, doing certain exercises that encourage a dog to calm down, like relaxation, different types of pattern games, that can really help a dog like learn these skills so that that they're better at it. It really is. It's sort of like it's sort of a muscle, you know, the more you work that muscle out, like you get them all excited, they're working, they're active, but then you also teach them how to bring them back down physiologically to baseline, you know, where their breathing is more of a resting state breathing. Okay. Where their muscles are loosening up, instead of being, you know, ready to perform. And they might be tense either from that they're triggered by something or they're just super, super active. It's going through that cycle and teaching them, you know, getting aroused and coming back down and slowing down, and giving them those skills and teaching them those skills can help them learn to calm themselves down better. Especially when, you know, once they're in the home, a lot of people, you know, a lot of people just basically like do nothing with the dogs, right? They just sit around and the dogs are hanging out with them. You know, I think a lot of dogs struggle with that, especially these young dogs that, you know, need some sort of stimulation, but they just don't know how to, you know, calm themselves down and do nothing.
Yeah. You know, to go back to the professional athlete example, after a big effort, you always see, you know, a runner kind of walk it off, shake it off, stretch, you know, Michael Phelps will get into the cool down pool and do a couple cool down laps. It's like, it's the same kind of idea.
Yeah. Yeah, really. Yeah. Physiologically. Yes, it is. It's getting that body back to, you know, more of a resting state. And obviously that's hard in a shelter. You know, the noise, the stress that goes along with it. And even like our shelter, we completed a new renovation like in 2020. So it looks like a fairly modern place, but I think our staff does a great job of caring for our animals, but still it's just not the same as having that comfort and consistency of being in a home environment, for any animal.
Well, I really hope that Chewy finds a home soon. I can't imagine that someone won't just swoop him up soon.
Yeah, well, you know? Maybe your podcast will help. If some trainer out there is looking for a great dog to do doggy sports, to be active with them, and he's incredibly fun to train. He continues to amaze me with how smart he is and just his personality. Like, if I didn't have unfortunately, my building where I live has a weight limit for dogs, I would take him home myself. So I say that about very few dogs, actually.
Yeah.
I'm not one of these trainers who goes to the shelter and want to adopt every single dog. I'm like, no, I kind of like having a very easy dog at home now. went through that stuff with the puppies and the adolescent dogs. It's like, I don't really want to go through that again. I get enough of that at work.
Yeah, if I lived closer, I would be super tempted because he's my kind of dog. And I've watched you from the beginning and, you know, from your first shelter short. And he's come such a long way. And you know, it's just beautiful to watch the work and see how he's turned into, you said in one of them that he's an unpolished stone. And yeah. I really feel like now he's actually a polished stone. Like you've taught him how to maneuver his world and he's just a wonderful dog.
Yeah, he is. You know, as far as that main behavior issue, the arousal biting, that has not occurred in months, like a very, very long time. So we're very proud of him and the progress he's made.
Yeah, great work.
Yeah, this was such a great conversation. And I just really hope that a lot of rescues and shelters listen to it, because I think that this is a problem that we see over and over. And you really have a roadmap of how to deal with a dog with arousal issues.
Yeah, thank you so much. You know, that's part of the reason why I did this, is that I think there are a lot of rescues and shelters out there. A lot of people, tons of people who just, they have their heart in the right place. They're very well-meaning. But unfortunately, as we know, like the dog training industry is unregulated. And there's, unfortunately, there's still a lot of people who just think, okay, we need to really kind of punish this behavior, punish without really teaching the dog skills of learning how to really, you know, behave, be a well-mannered dog in a human environment. You know, it's not just about like trying to suppress that behavior. We have to also understand where this dog's coming from and the function or the intent behind the behavior. And the more we start to like look at our dogs as these are, you know, biological beings, they are closely related to wolves and coyotes, that we got to think about this in terms of like, hey, this is an animal that has their own needs, okay? And it isn't just that easy to just, you know, kind of snap your fingers and they're going to be perfect in a human world where they're expected to like heel at your side at all times, you know, sit down, lay down, do nothing for hours on end until the human's ready to do something with you on their terms. It's you know, I think that's part of what, like my zoo background where yeah. I was caring for animals in zoos and looking at them as wild animals, like they're in this tiny exhibit and like, wow, how do I help these animals survive in this environment where frankly, like I'm looking at them like, you know, because a lot of zoos were kind of, you know, built in back where when zoos just didn't think about like making naturalistic exhibits. It's like, wow, we need to give you more enrichment. We need to stimulate your brain more so that you do have outlets. You are able to, you know, do what you're meant to do, you know, whether you're a dog, you're a bear, you're an otter, whatever you are meant to do. We got to give you some of these, a constructive outlet to do it.
Absolutely. We just had a great conversation with Kim Brophy on the podcast. Yeah. And, you know, we talked about how dogs are captive animals and we often don't think about that in our society and, you know, helping them navigate our human world and giving them the skills they need to express their natural behaviors in a way that works for everybody is so important for everyone's success.
Yeah, it really is. And yeah, and Kim Brophy's great. And I really love that she's having these conversations more. And I think it's also important to remember that dogs have evolved around humans for thousands of years. And one of their biggest, best traits, you know, the reason why they are the first animal that was domesticated is that they do pick up on our cues and our communication. You know, whether we do it intentionally or not, they have a better ability of doing that. So if we try to remember that, you know, and that, hey, they can learn from us. And we just got to, you know, show them, you know, with kindness how to do it and teach them. You know, really, you know, most of them can really do very, very well almost anywhere.
Love that.
I love that. Well, we were thrilled to have you on and we would love to have you back and learn more about what you're doing with Behavior Vets with their shelter and rescue program, because that's really exciting.
Oh, would love to. I'd love to come back. And yes, let's keep having these conversations and there's obviously a whole lot more out there to talk about.
Yeah.
You could talk for hours just on this one topic. So,
yes.
Yeah.
Ferdy Yao, thank you so much for this fabulous conversation and for your time. We really appreciate it.
Thank you. It was a pleasure being here.
Thanks for tuning in. If you liked this episode, don't forget to rate and review. It helps other folks like you find the show. Thanks to Mike Pesci for the original music and James Eade of Be Heard for production. For show notes and transcripts, visit podtotherescue.com. Let us know what you think about this episode on social media. We're at Pod to the Rescue on Facebook and Instagram, and we love connecting with listeners. We'll catch you next time on Pod to the Rescue. Oh, and tell your dog we said hi.